You probably can't go out for sushi, and it might take an hour to get to a discount store. But for some, the benefits of living in rural Iowa more than outweigh those inconveniences. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. While some love rural Iowa, more and more Iowans are drawn to city life. This hour, we continue our summer series, Beyond Iowa Nice, with a conversation about the urban-rural divide in our state. I'll talk with sociologist Paul Lasley and economist Dave Swenson about the pressures on rural areas and how life is changing. And we'll meet one Iowan who's committed to living in a rural area and another who couldn't wait to get out. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowa's cities are growing while many small towns in rural areas struggle to keep the people they have, let alone attract more people. As of 2010, 64% of Iowans lived in urban areas and 36% in rural areas. That trend shows no sign of slowing. This hour, we continue our summer series, Beyond Iowa Nice, with a conversation about the urban-rural divide in the state. And we're going to start in Eagle Grove, a town of about 3,500 people in Wright County in north-central Iowa. And with me is Jess Tolliver. He is superintendent of Eagle Grove Schools. And this is a town that's been in the news quite a bit lately because Prestige Farms recently announced plans to locate a new pork processing plant nearby. That's a plant that would bring 1,000 jobs to the area. Hello, Jess.
Hello.
So in Eagle Grove right now, what are people saying about the idea of this large pork processing plant?
For the most part, the conversations I've had has been very positive. You do have some people that do have some concerns with it, but for the most part, you have excitement about a large employer coming to the area.
Right. It's a 1,000 jobs. I mentioned already Eagle Grove is about 3,500 people. 1,000 jobs, that is a lot in this kind of rural area. What do you feel like that means to the area?
It is a lot of jobs, but it will not just be Eagle Grove. It will be regional. We have Fort Dodge. We have Webster City. We have Humboldt. We have Clarion. We have numerous little towns that are around there. Everybody is going to be affected by something like this because we're going to have to draw from a lot of different places in order to fill that many positions.
What do people who live in or near Eagle Grove do right now? What are some occupations?
Most of our jobs are agriculturally based. We have a large soybean processing plant. In Clarion, you have Hagee Manufacturing, which is agricultural equipment. We have a tiling company in town here, Gold Eagle Elevator. So a lot of your jobs, we're very agriculturally based, and that is not going to go away. Positions like at the school and on your main street, we are feeding to the agricultural culture. So,
do you feel like Eagle Grove is a town that has a hard time keeping its population? Is this a shrinking town?
Throughout history, yes, it is. I have been in this district 7 years. I'll be starting my eighth year. When I came, we were seeing some decline, but we've stabilized since then.
Do you ever hear from people who say, you know, we'd love to stay in the area, but there just aren't jobs for us?
You hit that from time to time. We are, because of our location, we have a lot of different opportunities around here. Even if it's not in Eagle Grove, you have other communities. We still lose a lot of people to the urban areas. There's people that want to live in the urban areas, there are people that want to live in the rural areas. Sometimes it's harder to find a job in the area of interest that you have in the rural areas.
Now, you are superintendent of Eagle Grove Schools, and this is an independent school district. I know a lot of school districts, rural school districts, have consolidated over the years to share resources. Paint me a picture of Eagle Grove Schools.
Eagle Grove Schools comprises, everything is in Eagle Grove. We have three small communities, Thor, Woolstock, and Vincent, that feed into the district here. We're tucked in between Fort Dodge, which is larger, Humboldt, which is larger, Webster City, which is larger, and then Wright County has three school districts that are about all the same size. Clarion is on the other side of us, which is similar in size to us. Land-wise, we are not very large. We have a small district from a square mile standpoint. We're a very blue-collar community full of, you know, hard workers, and wealth is not a huge issue here. We have we have as high a poverty rate as anybody in the area, but it's a very family-oriented community.
What do you think some of the big challenges you face as a small district?
As a small district, you always face fiscal challenges in the field of education. That is changing over the last few years when you've had funding situations from the state. Your small schools and your large schools are always facing the same challenges. You don't have any school in the state of Iowa saying right now, we have an excess of money we don't know what to do with.
No, I've never heard that.
Yeah, we have, you know, in a rural district, most rural districts in Iowa, you are looking at declining enrollment, and declining enrollment is always a constant problem of what do you do with staffing to give your students the best opportunities.
Now, while no school districts in the state are complaining about an excess of money, if you look at a larger school district and a larger community, just because the student population is high and the resources are there, they're going to have more activities, more opportunities, more extracurriculars, more electives that are available to their students. Is that a frustration for you?
I don't even know if I agree with the statement, if you want the truth. We have worked very hard as a region. We know that the with the technology we have, that the walls of a high school aren't going to contain your kids. You're going to have to go farther. We actually have a regional academy that we put together with Iowa Central to where we can offer engineering, we offer advanced manufacturing, we offer business classes, we offer education classes. We have schools from Fort Dodge, Webster City, Clarion, Goldfield, Humboldt, and Eagle Grove all attending that. It's open to our junior seniors where our kids can graduate with 30 credits or more when they get out. We've just had to be creative because we can't put 30 kids into an engineering class. We can put a sufficient number in by using the resources and kids from other schools.
All right. And do kids have to travel for that, or is that something that they can participate in through technology?
No, we travel, and it is in Eagle Grove, so we don't have to travel very far, but we have a busing system set up to where buses come in from each district and drop the kids off. We teach them there all morning, and then they go back to the districts, and it's completely ran through Iowa Central Community College.
So do you feel like the kids in your district have an equal educational opportunity to kids in, let's say, looking around your area, the schools in, say, Cedar Falls?
I actually do. I have four children of my own, and I have no problem sending them to this school and believing they get a quality education. We do things a little bit different, but we're still mandated by the state of what we have to offer for course offerings. And so that dictates that my kids are going to get, at worst, the minimum of what the state requires you to offer.
With the new pork processing plant possibly locating nearby, and that looks likely, bringing again those 1,000 jobs into the area, what do you think that means for the schools?
It probably means stability. You're not going to see a windfall of money because schools are still paid on a per-student basis. Every kid we get so much money. Once we get 20 kids, we add a teacher. So balancing the budget is not going to be any easier or any harder than it was before. What it does mean is when you look at a school, Eagle Grove size, we have 800 kids. You know, one of the questions always is in rural Iowa is, how long can we stay open? Something like this not only will allow us to stay open, but will allow all the school districts around here to stabilize an enrollment and stay open for a long time.
And this is something we've talked about on Talk of Iowa in a number of different ways, but how important do you think it is to Eagle Grove to have the schools, stay open?
It's very important to your people. People take pride in their community. They take pride in your schools. If you're trying to attract people, if you're trying to attract businesses to town, one of the things they always look at is your school. And so having a good school system, having a stability in your school system helps families move there, helps businesses move there. It helps the whole economy on that standpoint.
And do you feel like it gives the community a center around which?
Absolutely. In rural Iowa, regardless of where you're at, the majority of your activities taking place are centered around the school in one way or another.
I want to talk about the choices that you've made personally. You mentioned you have four kids and you've chosen to live in rural Iowa, and you grew up in rural Iowa too. You grew up in the Chardin area, right?
Absolutely. Yep. I've spent my entire year or my entire career in rural communities. I spent 9 years in South Dakota, also in a rural community.
Why have you made that choice?
I think probably it's the place where I feel comfortable and the people I relate to. Everybody, regardless of who you are or where you come from, you find a place that you feel comfortable, and where you feel comfortable, you're usually the most successful.
As a dad, you also are making that choice for your kids. Why is it important to you to raise your kids in rural Iowa?
There's a lot of good family values. You have a small community. You have a lot of things that you don't have to worry about in a larger community. I have a sister that teaches inner city Chicago, and she loves there and wouldn't leave there. So I don't know if it's always where you're raised. It's kind of what fits into your lifestyle and what you want to do.
I know that there are a lot of people who live in larger towns in Iowa, and as I mentioned, that's where the migration has been, to these larger communities in the state, who think, oh, I would never want to live in a town as small as Eagle Grove. What are the benefits? What would you tell them makes life there good for you and your kids?
I'll give you an example that happened yesterday. I don't know if you know, but we had a large windstorm that came through town this weekend and blew a lot of trees down. So we're dealing with insurance agents coming to town and different groups coming to clean up. And I was driving the insurance agent around for the school district, and we're looking at different places, and he wants to get out and look at a roof. And I parked my truck, and I got out, and we walked over there, and he said, are you going to leave it running? I said, yeah, I'm not worried about it. And his quote was, you would not do that where I live. You know the people, you look out for each other, you've got more of a family atmosphere, you know everybody around you, and those advantages I like.
Do you feel like you're able to give your kids more freedom because you do feel secure in your community?
I don't know. I feel safe in most places in Iowa. I have a brother that lives in the suburbs of Des Moines, and I don't see his kids like to play outside and have the freedom there, too. So I think we're very fortunate to live in Iowa, to where a lot of places are safe that way.
Well, Jess, thank you so much for talking with me.
Yes.
Jess Tolliver is the superintendent of Eagle Grove Schools. In a moment, we'll continue our conversation about the urban-rural divide in Iowa and brain drain from the rural areas of the state. We want to hear from you. Have you made a conscious choice to live in rural Iowa? Or maybe you have made a choice to leave. We'd love to hear your story. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're continuing our summer series, Beyond Iowa Nice, with a conversation about the urban-rural divide in Iowa when it comes to opportunities and quality of life. And with me now is Iowa State University sociologist Paul Lasley. He is co-investigator of the Iowa Farm and Rural Life Poll. He has studied rural culture and issues for many years. Hello again, Paul.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Well, that's my pleasure.
Dave Swenson is also here. He's associate scientist in the Department of Economics and the College of Agriculture at Iowa State University, and he has also studied these issues extensively. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show.
And thank you.
Dave, I'll start with you. Can you give me some statistics? Give me an idea of how the population in rural areas of Iowa has been shrinking.
Sure. Well, just this decade, and it's been going on for a long time, but just this decade, 71 of Iowa's 99 counties have posted in 2015 populations smaller than they had in 2010. So that's a trend that's continued for at least two decades now. 635 of the state's 945 cities have also contracted this decade. And so broadly, broadly, Iowa is continuing to contract. And if we break it down by population group, if I organize the metropolitan areas and then the large urban and the small urban and the rural counties, this is the way it works out. The state of Iowa has grown 2.5% this decade. Now, the metropolitan counties, the Des Moines, the Johnson County, Linn County, et cetera, they've grown by 5.4%, twice as much, more than twice as much as the state average. And if the state average is only 2.5% and the metros have grown by 5.4%, that tells you what's going on with the rest of the state. The large urban areas like Mason City and Fort Dodge and Clinton, they've contracted by 1.4%. The smaller urban areas like Cherokee on average and Carroll and some of those places, 1.2%. And then Iowa's most rural counties this decade have contracted by 2.3%. So we really do have two Iowas. We have a booming, burgeoning metropolitan urban dynamic, and then we have a continuation of what has been going on for two full decades for sure, of contraction and struggles with stability in much of our rural areas.
And it seems like that divide, if it's increasing, this kind of migration is increasing at this rate, that divide is also growing larger.
It is. It's not everybody who's migrating and the movement. The biggest issue with regard to the movement and rural vitality is the loss of people who are of working age, ages 25 to 34, 35 to 44. That's the population. You have two groups of people. You have 25 to 34. I call them the skill acquiring part of your population. Those are people that you're counting on to become productive over time. The people that are 35 to 44 are the skill applying part of your population. They're the ones that are producing the most value in whatever they do, whether it's in public service or private service. Those rural counties that I just talked about, large urban, or those non-metro, large urban, small urban, and rural counties, they lost that young adult working population at disproportionate rates relative to the whole state average. I'll give you an example. Places like Fort Dodge, Mason City, Clinton, those kinds of counties, last decade, that population contracted by 25%. Just of age 35 to 44, the most skilled workers. In the most rural counties, that group of people contracted by 30%. So there's a palpable and a tangible loss in your employment base, in your leadership base, and in your regional social capital that has to be both acknowledged and has to be noticed.
Are the older demographics staying put, or is there a return in those older age groups?
Okay, there's still high out-migration among 45 to 64. We worry less about them in terms of productivity and work because they're older and they don't work quite so hard anymore. What we really care about are young workers. I'm just kidding there.
And thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah, well, no, I'm serious. What we care about is can we hold on to our young, productive workforce? And it's not college-age kids or just postgraduate high school. What we care about is that young, productive workforce. The boomers, this is what you're talking about. The boomers are still migrating out as well. They're part of that out-migration. The idea that people are in significant numbers moving back to rural areas is a myth. It's something that someone will point out that somebody moved back, and they might point out three families, but they're forgetting that 3,000 families left and never came back. The idea that the boomers are going to come back and repopulate rural space is really not borne out by the statistics.
So, Paul, you ask these questions all the time. Why are people leaving rural Iowa?
Well, there's sort of two pieces to that migration, which Dave has already sort of indicated. It's very much a selective migration in which much of rural Iowa has lost or continues to lose the younger, better educated. And in fact, and some people have commented that young people are the export crop. We export two crops, or three crops, corn, soybeans, and young people. And they sort of joke about that, but in fact, there are kind of two reasons that account for that. One is the push factor, the lack of jobs. The lack of jobs, the lack of opportunity to put down roots, whether it's really more than jobs. It's affordable housing. It's availability of capital. And those are sort of what I'd call the push factors. But then there's also the attraction or the pull factor. The better educated, younger people looking for either partners, potential future spouses, recreation opportunities, cultural activities, shopping activities, what we might call the nightlife, the entertainment. And you look at the metro areas, they certainly recognize that with the, and you can see that in every metro city in Iowa, they're catering to that younger population with creative housing and entertainment and attracting young people to downtown areas in alternative sort of housing. So there's sort of two factors, Charity, the push factor and the pull factor.
Well, and I want to bring on another guest that can illustrate both of those factors. She is the person you've been talking about, Paul. Tessa Canton-Wine is one of those young, educated individuals who grew up in rural Iowa and has moved to an urban area. She lives in the Des Moines area now, and she's with us on the phone right now. Hello, Tessa.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today. And you grew up in Clark County, so outside of Osceola. Tell me a little bit about your childhood.
Definitely. Well, just like you said, I am from southern Iowa, Clark County. I grew up just about 5 minutes outside of Osceola, south on Highway 69. I lived there pretty much all throughout my young years. We did move when I was 14, roughly, around that time to Woodburn, which is a very, very tiny town. It's 200 people. I don't even know if you could technically even really say it's a town, I guess. I always kind of think of it as almost being like a little village because the only thing that's left there besides the conglomeration of houses is a post office and a bar. And it's small enough, too, that it doesn't sustain any business beyond that. And if there are children who live there, they go to school in Osceola.
So when you were growing up, there came a point where you started really chafing against the fact that you lived in such a rural area.
Yeah.
What happened? What made you start feeling like you didn't want to be there?
Well, when I was really young, that had first started with the pull of friends, right? So yeah, it's usually everyone's kind of their drive when they're really young and when they're up, you know, through their teen years is I want to do things with friends, I want to see friends, you know, and things like that. So when I was really young, that was the pull. I didn't like, being out in the country, you know, a drive into town would take anywhere from like, you know, depending on the weather conditions, because our routes were either gravel or dirt road by our house. I could take anywhere from like, you know, 5 to 15 minutes. So to even go into town for like play dates or to, you know, just even go to the grocery store for like a gallon of milk, you know, whatever you wanted to do in town, whether it was seeing friends or, you know, after school activities, anything like that was just insanely hard to do sometimes. My family wasn't well off. We often only had one working vehicle. So that kind of complicated things also.
Well, and you mentioned your family not being well off. You also didn't always have a working phone, right?
Yes, exactly. Southern Iowa isn't exactly known for, to put it nicely, being, you know, really well off in general. I don't remember. I'm sure the gentleman on the other end maybe the socioeconomic aspect of this, but I don't remember where Clark County itself falls. Decatur County is directly to the south, and at one time I know it was the third poorest county in Iowa. So that area, south central, is just, there's a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of opportunity there. And my family growing up for the most part was really illustrative of that. We didn't really have a lot of resources or, you know, always a working vehicle. From the time I was, and this is in the 1990s, so this isn't like a long time ago or anything like that. But in between the time I was in, you know, third grade to seventh grade, we actually didn't have a working telephone even. So if we wanted to use a phone, it was either drive to my grandma's house in Woodburn or go into town and use a payphone. So that was really just, you know, that colored everything. So taking that into perspective, as I got older and into my teen years, I kind of started to feel, you know, there wasn't anything unique about me necessarily. I'm a white heterosexual woman. Like, I'm not super exciting in a lot of aspects. I just, for some reason, felt like I didn't quite fit in always necessarily. Some of my interests were just not shared by, you know, other people I run into or talk to. You know, I really don't like country music. I don't like rodeos. That was a popular thing when I was in high school. I'm just not fans of that type of cultural aspect of what I'll call rural Iowa. So, and then as I got into college, I started to meet a lot, I'll say maybe a more variety of people and got more exposure to variety ideas. I went to college at Simpson College in Indianola. And then I went to graduate school after that in Ames at Iowa State. I was in the history department there. And that really is when I was like, I really don't ever want to return to, like, rural Iowa. I just want to stay, you know, in an urban area where I have a lot of access to opportunities, jobs, friends, you know, everything that was just mentioned, like, literally before I came on, you know, potential dating partners, you know, different cultural things I could do. Jobs, that basically there's a huge, for me personally, dearth of all of those things in southern rural Iowa.
So the things that you felt as a teenager, that isolation, the lack of connection, the lack of fitting in, then as you got older, it sounds like you were able to identify what it was you were missing, even if you didn't know that you were missing it then.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
So when you go back to visit in rural Iowa now, how do you feel about it?
I try to get back, you know, because one of the reasons I'm in Des Moines now is I have a pretty busy schedule and I like to keep busy and have fun and do different things. So I always try to carve out a piece of time to go visit my family. My grandma still lives in Woodburn and my parents still live there. And so when I go back to visit, I usually try to be there at least for a good day. But even visiting, every time I go back, I think to myself, wow, like, look at, you know, it's kind of interesting to see how Osceola itself has changed a little bit. But it's just, I'm trying to find the right word for it. It's just so kind of depressing almost. It seems almost kind of, now that I'm where I'm at in life and then going back there, it seems kind of like lonely, I guess. It seems like there's just so much lacking there. And, you know, that's, I think, just my perspective coloring things. Obviously, people live there for a reason. I mean, that's just that they're doing well there or they're happy there. So, but what ends up eventually happening is that I will go visit for a day. I'll, you know, have fun with my family, and then I'll just literally start getting an itch to head back up to Des Moines, because just the way that, you know, I can't get access to, like, simple things, like if I want to go get a pop at a store. I mean, it's just kind of like, I love you, parents, but now I have to leave you and go back up to civilization.
Oh, Tessa, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Tessa Cantonwine lives in Des Moines. She grew up in rural Clark County, and she's one of those people who chose not to stay and would not go back. And as I said, as I introduced Tessa, I mean, Paul, she exactly illustrated your point about young people not finding what they're looking for in rural Iowa. And I think that I'd love to hear from both of you on the idea of different kinds of ruralness. I mean, Dave, you were talking about it a little bit earlier, the degree of ruralness. Now, I mean, Tessa was really isolated with her family because of her situation, but also because of distance. And I mean, Dave, you can put into context for us. I mean, there are areas of Iowa that are very remote.
Oh, yes, yes. We have parts of the state of Iowa that the largest town is no larger than 2,500. You really don't have anything like an urban influence at all. Your county seat is the biggest place. Your general associations with your peers, with other communities in your high school, sports, athletics, it's all small-town interaction. And in and of itself, that becomes your community, your region of influence, and it establishes a lot of your expectations. What happens with everybody, whether they're in, we have these smaller places, these smaller counties in Iowa that are mostly rural, and then we can start moving up. We have a handful of places that maybe have a central city of about 5,000. And, your urban area starts to take on different characteristics. It might have a Walmart. It might have a hospital. It might have a range of things that draw you into that community. You move up the level. You get to Fort Dodge, Clinton, Mason City, Burlington, Ottumwa. Then those communities are much more full-service communities. They do have hospitals. They do have a high range of services. They do have a wider range of entertainment opportunities. They do create employment opportunities for young adults. And we do have this progression as we move up the ladder when we move in Iowa.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, Dave Swenson, associate scientist in the Department of Economics and the College of Agriculture at Iowa State University. Paul Lasley, Iowa State University sociologist. He is the co-investigator of the Iowa Farm and Rural Life Poll. And we want to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are continuing our summer series, Beyond Iowa Nice, and we're talking about the rural-urban divide in Iowa. We've seen rural areas, small towns in Iowa, rural areas, the population shrink steadily over the last couple of decades, while urban areas in the state continue to grow. With me, Iowa State University sociologist Paul Lasley and associate scientist in the Department of Economics and the College of Agriculture at Iowa State University, Dave Swenson. And Paul, I want to give you a chance to weigh on this, in on this as well, because we are talking about different kinds of rural areas. I've been talking with friends about, did you grow up in a small town? Would you live in a rural area? And a lot of the people that I've heard from who say, yes, I love living in a rural area, live probably no more than 20 or 25 minutes outside of one of these metropolitan areas that is growing. So they sort of have the best of both worlds, if that's what you're looking for. So as we look at these different rural areas around the state, do we see a pretty radical quality of life difference?
Well, indeed, and you point out, adjacency to metro areas, rural communities, whether you talk about rural counties or rural small towns that are adjacent to metro areas, are much different than those more isolated rural places that are beyond sort of the commuter belt to get into town. We see substantial differences in those, and Dave's got some of the numbers here. But what we really are seeing is kind of two rural Iowas, those that are adjacent. And normally I talk about those that are within an hour commute. It seems like people will spend about an hour commuting to a job, and that makes also commuting to such things while they're at the job. That's where they do their shopping, their major purchases. It's those communities that are really outside of those commuter belts that we see the greatest population decline for some of the reasons that Tessa mentioned. I think beyond that, though, what we're really seeing is sort of the formation of different types of rural lifestyle or culture. For example, there are a number of small, rural, isolated places that are really places of refuge where people want to get away for second homes. They want to get away from the hustle and bustle of city life, away from the internet. They want to be able to enjoy nature for hunting, fishing, outdoor recreation activities, but they don't want to live there full time. They don't want to live there year round. Then we have, and those communities are quite different in terms of the values and beliefs and interaction of people. It's those communities that perhaps Tessa described in her home community where we see the highest level of out-migration, particularly of young, well-educated, articulate people. And I see that as not only an immediate problem, but far-reaching, because for every one of those young people that leave the community, you're losing not only their skills, but they're not going to put down roots and raise children. And so it goes back to the school enrollment question that you asked of Jess earlier. It's more than the loss of this generation. It's the loss of subsequent generations. We've seen this first emerge in the 1980s in the midst of the farm crisis as farm families were forced off the land. Many of those were young farm families just getting started. Looking back now 30 years, if we had been able to keep those young farm families in those rural communities, they would now be middle-aged. They would have kids in junior high and high school. And so when you start compounding the losses that communities face, and I think that's one of the particularly sad situations that we've let this go on so long that in some cases we may be beyond a point of recovery.
Well, it may be too late.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones. A lot of people want to share their own experiences with rural and urban Iowa. Chris is on the line from Beaverdale. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Hi. What's your story?
Okay. My story is my husband and I, Kevin and I, met in college at Iowa State. We moved away. I have an advanced degree and he's an engineer. We moved out of the state like a lot of young people did after college, worked most of our life in Chicago. But we had a dream to move back to Iowa, and we wanted to live on a farmstead. And we moved back about 12 years ago, and we moved into Greene County and bought a 10-acre farmstead outside of Rippey. Loved it. Loved it there. Had a son who was going to the school there. But about 3 years ago, Prestige Farms built a hog confinement less than a mile from our property. And basically, before the ink was dry on that, they built another one not too far. So we moved. We moved back to where I grew up, which is Beaverdale.
So you wanted that rural lifestyle, but then you found that living next to these large farms was not something that you could do.
Well, it's not something we could do. It's not something we wanted to sit around and watch continuing to happen. There's nothing you can do to stop it. The Iowa legislature does nothing when bills are presented to at least try to protect the people that are there. We were there first before these were built near us, and we could move because our livelihoods did not depend on farming. Right. We have a lot of great friends still there who can't move because they farm, and they don't want to live next to it either. But, you know, that was our dream. We had to give up. We actually even had a little campground on our property for the bike. We were near the bike trail and near the Raccoon River. So, I mean, we volunteered. We contributed. We wanted to live there. That was our dream. But it was pretty much stomped on by Prestige.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for sharing your story. And I want to talk about this because this is, although this isn't necessarily part of the urban-rural divide, this is a serious divide in rural Iowa. And we were talking earlier about a large pork processing plant being built outside of Eagle Grove, the excitement about the jobs that that may bring to the community. But that was the same pork processing plant that Mason City said, hey, we don't want that within our city limits. So this is a difficult topic to jump into. But, Paul, I'll let you have first crack at it. I mean, that creates a divide in rural areas.
Yes, and I think we're all, many of us at least, recognize that the location or siting of whether it's pork plants or industrial facilities, reclamation facilities, there's lots of things that, quote, go under the rubric of development that we don't want to live beside. In this case, she points out that it was a hog operation, but we can find other things. I wouldn't want to live beside a manufacturing plant. I wouldn't want to live next door to a big box retailer. So one of the challenges, it seems to me, is to put this into broader perspective, is how can we ensure the quality of life for everyone? We know that we have to have, for example, shopping malls, but few of us would want to live next door to a shopping mall or a busy intersection with a gas station. Or and my parents, who happen to live in out of state in another community, complain about a bar that's probably three blocks away, but they have loudspeakers. And again, I think part of this comes down to respecting your neighbors. And I'm not sure we've spent enough time thinking about the issue of how you demonstrate respect to your neighbors, to treat them like you'd like to be treated, to demonstrate environmental stewardship. So whether it's traffic or loud music or truck traffic or the odor of pigs, there's lots of things that can detract from one's quality of life. And I don't know that we have spent enough time talking about how to be a good neighbor across, because we're going to have change. That we're seeing that across the landscape, whether it's industrial development, agricultural development, or the encroachment of metropolitan areas on rural communities. And we see that as a contentious issue in around the metro areas that Dave talked about that are experiencing 5% growth. So we have to, we probably need to think about how we can do a better job so that everyone is protected.
Well, and it's also a question of lack of local control as well. I mean, let's say Chris and her neighbors, the closest people who lived to her, whether they were farming or lived on an acreage, they didn't necessarily have a choice about what was going to happen to their community or to their their very rural community. And that's an issue that has been very divisive in Iowa for a long time.
That's right. I think it's whenever there is social change that is externally driven or imposed from the outside, that tends to create even more division. It's one thing if you have a local producer growing or a local business expanding versus someone that's viewed as an outsider.
And Dave, I want to get your take on this as well, because we were talking about you need jobs. You need jobs for young people to stay. And then you have a large pork processing plant come into Wright County that provides about 1,000 jobs. Perhaps some young people in the area may take advantage of those opportunities. But how does it really work in reality?
Well, the way it really works in reality is most of the people in that region are already working or have a mixture of jobs. That's the way it is in rural areas. A lot of people have more than one job. Some people will stop out commuting and maybe take a job. Some people from the surrounding region might in commute to take a job. But what we do know is that Iowans, in general, conventional Iowans don't really like working in pork processing plants, and we tend to depend on folks coming in to work in those plants who have historically now become much more comfortable working, and that tends to be Hispanic immigrants and other people that come to work.
And these groups of people who are willing to come in and take those jobs are also one of the only ways that rural Iowa is growing.
That's exactly right. And if you want to look around Iowa and find places that are showing little sparks of growth, places like Storm Lake, maybe places like Denison, Sioux County, other places in southern Iowa that also are showing some growth, almost always you're finding the net of their growth is because their non-white population or their Hispanic or other non-white population is growing. I was going to get back to that. Usually in a slaughterhouse or a packing facility, at least three-quarters of the workers or close to three-quarters of the workers tend to be Hispanic. And so what you're going to get in this community is some change in diversity, and you're going to get some in-migration. But that in-migration isn't as great as perhaps people think. They're going to have 900 jobs, but you're not going to get 900 families. People are going to live in the region. People are going to commute into these jobs. And what you're going to see is the region's going to absorb this gain, not just Eagle Grove, not just Wright County.
Okay, so what is it with the communities that are doing well, that have maintained population and have some economic strength, because we've talked about how poverty can be a real issue in rural areas, what is the key to success for communities that are going strong, Dave?
Well, most of the communities, they're in some form of transition. They historically depended on manufacturing. They historically depended on regional agricultural activities. Modern manufacturing needs much less labor. Modern agricultural activities needs much less labor. For those communities, especially, and I'm thinking now about medium-sized communities, central places, trade centers, diversifying their economies, becoming much more like the state average, being able to offer health care, being able to offer shopping opportunities, being a place where a young accountant or a young engineer or other types of professionals can muster up enough business in the region. That's one of the keys to regional diversity, stability, and resilience, is diversifying your economy. It's not abandoning your strengths. It's just realizing that there are limits to what you can do with your historical strengths, and you have to modernize your regional economy.
I want to get back to the phones. Abby's on the line in Storm Lake. Abby, quickly, what's your story?
Hi. Well, I grew up in a suburb of Des Moines in the Southeast Polk District, and then went to UNI and lived in the Cedar Falls, Waterloo area where I met my husband. And then we ended up taking a job here in Storm Lake. I'm an ESL teacher, so this is the best place in the state to be for my job. And my husband is an RN, and so we always joke that our jobs are generic enough that we could go anywhere, but we really, really love Storm Lake. It was scary moving here because I've never been anywhere that was really small or didn't have a Target, but we found that it's incredibly affordable to live here. We were able to buy a house after our first year of living here on just one of our salaries, and very cool.
Well, yeah, Abby, thank you so much for sharing your story. And that's one of those towns in transition that Dave, you were just talking about. Paul, I want to ask you, why does it matter? So we haven't been talking about the allure of the cities because the cities don't really need to market themselves. People are just going there. But right. Why does it matter if we're losing all of these people in rural Iowa? This is change. There may be no going back. Why is it a big deal?
I think there are a couple of reasons. One is, as we look at the continued concentration of population in urban areas, we don't see it so much in Iowa as we see nationally, that we really have overgrown and we've exceeded the capacity. So we have such things as gridlock, such things as on the freeways, lack of water. The problems of crime, I think, is the over-concentration of people. I think it makes much more sense to have a dispersed population. Now, do we need 954 towns in Iowa? I'm not going to get into that debate. We may have too many, but it seems to me that the social fabric of rural places and of rural communities are threatened as we continue to see this selective out-migration. Because what it ends up occurring then over time is you have then a higher concentration of elderly or senior people, the lack of services, and it's the lack of services that then starts a spiraling downward. As those communities lose their amenities, they become less attractive. But there are some people who cannot move, or people that's going to be very hard for them to move. And I think that they become the casualties of these large-scale social economic trends.
Paul, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University sociologist Paul Lasley. Dave Swenson, thank you.
You're welcome.
Dave Swenson is associate scientist in the Department of Economics and the College of Agriculture at Iowa State University. We've been talking about the urban-rural divide in Iowa this hour as we continue our summer series, Beyond Iowa Nice. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.